Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello.
Richard asked me to record this time somewhere that's not too loud with the traffic. you can probably tell from the sound effects I have not succeeded. I've sat on the green opposite our house. I'm not on my own. Ray's here. Ray, do you want to say hi?
Hi.
just back from picking up some bits for our supper for tonight. We're going to... Oh, what was that, Ray? Your phone. I'm going to try... Sorry, he dropped his phone. We're going to try and make a chorizo and squid thing that we found in the recipe book. And I've got some nice new wrapping paper because we were running a bit low. And tomorrow I'm going to see my sister and her boyfriend, and it's his birthday, so I picked up some wine and chocolates for him. So it's one of those kind of Saturdays. Pretty mosey. I like these sorts of Saturdays. It's been a really busy week. Quite eclectic. For example, on Thursday morning, I took Ray around to school because he's about to start secondary, so we're looking at our options. Then in the afternoon, I flew to Portugal with Richard. Then we DJed until 1 a.m. in Portugal, got up the next day, swam in the sea, flew back to London, got in the car, went straight to Cheltenham Literary Festival, where there was an event last night for our cookbook. So that was quite a crazy 36 hours. Oh, it's getting windy now. Richard's going to kill me. I am absolutely thrilled. Oh, hello. Nice little doggy. Dog's come to say hello. I am really, really, really excited about this week's episode. Oh, bye, doggy. Because, you know, I've been very lucky. I've recorded with lots of amazing people. But every once in a while, you also meet someone who's like got that... She's like a little bit magic, because this week's guest is Mary Berry. And I met her 3 times now. So I met her once when she was on Strictly. She popped out of a cake during a dance routine. I said hello to her there while I was on it, that is. And then we met again when she was filming her TV show. It's on BBC iPlayer. It's called Cook and Share. And she came to Wilderness Festival, where Richard made us both a margarita. Oh, the wind's picking up. I'm sorry, Richard. And then, oh, listen to the leaves in the tree. Is that quite nice? Hopefully that's quite soothing in your ears. And then we met again when I went around to her house. I went to Henley to see her. And lo and behold, she baked flipping cake. Of course, salted caramel, completely delicious. So good, in fact, was that good, Ray? So good, in fact, that producer Claire and I both independently made our own salted caramel cake. Ray, did you just wipe your hands on my jeans while I'm talking?
And I said sorry.
And anyway, with Mary, there was a lot I wanted to talk to her about, but also some of it I was, you know, respectful she might not want to speak about. I'm talking about the fact that she tragically had one of her children die when he was only 19, her son William. But she was very open about everything, and it's fascinating to speak to someone who is now 87 years old, and she still has a lot of the things that still bother modern working parents now, the guilt, the judgment, obviously way more for her when she was first starting her career and working all through her babies. She had 3 kids. But still, a lot of it was, you know, a lot more relevant to now than, I don't know, maybe you would expect. But she was wonderfully open, incredibly wise, very, very kind. One of those people who just looks on lots of the positives. Very clear with her thinking. And I mean, I think you're going to love this conversation. And as we were talking, yes, we had tea from a proper china cup and saucer, salted caramel cake in front of us. What could be better? So I will leave you in the soothing comforting and wise words of Mary Berry, and I'll see you on the other side. Oh, before I go, I just remembered something I think you'll need to know, actually. So during the chat, so I'm there with Mary, but there's also Claire Jones, producer, of course, and also Lucy Young. Now, Lucy is Mary's right-hand woman, really, and the reason I wanted to let you know about her is not only to say thank you to her, because I don't think the podcast recording would happen without her, but also because Mary talks about Lucy. They've worked together for 32 years. They first met when Lucy was coming on board to help with the putting together a cookbook, which is an Arbor cookbook, but she now is sort of Mary's right-hand woman for everything, really, helps with all aspects of her life. Oh my goodness, raise up a tree. I'll take a picture of you in a second. And she's completely lovely. Yes, I will. And I wanted you to know who she was, because we speak about Lucy. They've obviously got just the most incredible relationship, really, really close. And actually, I knew Mary was a lovely person anyway, but she's also one of those people who's got around her a team of people, mostly women. It's getting really windy. If not all women, who've all worked with her for a very, very long time, which is always the mark of someone really great, isn't it? Anyway, I just thought you should know that. It's getting really windy. Rich is going to kill me. I'll see you in a bit. Enjoy. Well, thank you so much for having me over to your house today, Mary. And I think the fact that we're sat here with cups of tea in proper china with a saucer and cup and cake is exactly how everybody pictures us recording this podcast. So it's ideal.
Well, it's salted caramel cake. You know, I'm not really into salt in cakes and things, mm-hmm. but it's funny how things, you suddenly think, well, it is rather nice.
I think it's delicious. I love a bit of salted caramel. This is very lovely. And tea is always the way to my heart. So I'm a very happy person at the moment.
Well, I don't know how you manage, because I know you have five boys. I just think I had two, and I was fairly frantic with two. Mm. And as a busy mum, and you've got five, but I suppose they all look after each other.
Sometimes. I sometimes realise that the less I interfere, the better it is. So when I'm out the room and I let them get on with stuff, they actually kind of sort themselves out. Whereas if I'm there, sometimes they're vying for attention, and actually I can kind of be adding to it. But actually, as I was leaving to come and see you today, my youngest, Mickey, who's three, said to me, "Are you working today, Mummy?" Because he's just coming into that bit where he's just starting to understand that I work, and he asks questions now. And I said, "Yes, I am." And he just burst into floods of tears. I was like, this is such a apt scene for someone who's about to record a podcast about being a working mum. It was really, really perfect.
I remember your mother, Janet, because Blue Peter was something that when my children were young, we always watched Blue Peter. They loved the dog. Was it called Shep or Shep?
Yep, there was a Shep.
There was a Shep. And, you know, they would sit down as... I, as a child, used to listen to Children's Hour at 5 o'clock. And then my own children were watching your mum. And I believe your mum, who told me when I met you at Wilderness, that she lives very near you.
She does. She lives 10
minutes
away.
So she'll be doing
her
Blue Peter stuff. And one of my most treasured possessions is the gold Blue Peter badge.
You've got a gold one.
A gold one.
That's very impressive. What do you get a gold one for?
I always think of when I'm cooking, I'm teaching. Mm. And so I think it's because I encourage mums or dads to cook with their children and bake with their children.
There it is.
I was very honoured to have it. And it
you
is
know
such
what? I've never actually
beautifully
held one before.
Designed. Isn't it lovely?
It's gorgeous. And actually, this is the sort of the cherry on top for the Blue Peter badges. I've got some of the standard ones. One I got by myself for going on the programme, but the others I used to steal from my mum because she used to bring them home when she'd filmed. And then I also got one that's blue with a silver ship on it, which is what you get if you go on the programme on two occasions but for two different reasons. So that's my... It's not as good as a gold one.
I shall put mine safely back in
yes,
it,
do, because
I'm very
I have been known to sell them.
And I know that there are... aren't so many of them about.
There really aren't, and I genuinely did used to sell them. I used to sell them in the playground when I was small, so you're wise to put it back in the box. I can't be trusted, quite frankly.
Yeah, I've sort of shown it to my grandchildren when they were young.
Yeah, no, that's lovely. That's lovely. I'm really glad you showed me, actually. As I said, I've never actually seen one in real life, and I know my mum would quite like one. So maybe we can see what we can do about that. But we met really recently, as you said, at Wilderness Festival.
Did I enjoy Wilderness? Because I've only been to one other festival. And this one was, I remember driving in, it was so beautiful.
Mm.
And it was so well run. And everybody was happy to be there, weren't they? And there was no litter. There was a beautiful lake, and you were allowed to swim in the lake.
Mm.
And there were even lifeguards there. I mean, what a day out for a family. So much to do. And I think on the Sunday they were playing cricket, or all yeah. sorts of things.
I think that someone mentioned it was naked cricket, but I'm not sure if that's true.
Oh.
I hope that doesn't change your view of the
festival.
But
I mean, it's very much emphasis on food. You could go there and have a dinner cooked by well-known chefs, and you could do it at 12, or you could do a much bigger event. And I had tastes of them all, and it was absolutely amazing. And also there was fashion. You know, people dressed up.
Yeah.
I know my own daughter had a sort of extraordinary outfit and was totally happy in turbans and things. People just wore what they like. They did have themes, but not everybody. You looked in the dressing up box and wore whatever you felt at home. But the whole atmosphere was absolutely lovely. And, of course, there was music and I could hear you singing. And then we actually met.
Yeah.
And I remember I thought she's so young to have five children and your little short skirt. I thought, how does she look so calm and so lovely when what she's left at home are five children, five boys?
The key there in that sentence is at home. That's how I was so calm. But we ate a delicious risotto and my husband Richard made us margaritas.
He did indeed.
Yes.
And was it strong?
Yes.
I just had a little sip and I wouldn't have been able to continue. it was absolutely lovely.
Yeah, it was good. And we had a very brief chat about working mothers, really, because I don't really think there's many people who are as good an example of a work ethic as you. And I just wondered what's going on in your life at the moment? What projects have you got? And when I arrived here today, there was lots of activity in your house for new cookbooks and the TV show. And
I like to think that our recipes are just what people want. I like to think that I'm there holding their hand while they're looking at the recipe. I'm there. I hope every detail is in that recipe. Where it might go wrong, saying, you know, watch out, it might curdle. If it does, just give it a good beat and it'll be all right. And we do test them until they absolutely are perfect. The recipes we did at Wilderness were in the book Cook and Share.
Mm-hmm.
And the advantage of having a book is that on my book, every single recipe, there's a picture. So you sort of, maybe they've watched the program on Wilderness and they see some of the cooking, then they look in the book and it reminds them what the recipe is.
Yeah.
And they think if they want to make the salted caramel cake, there's a picture of it there that, well, that'll help me.
Yeah.
Because I personally like a book. I don't like it on a Kindle because you can't see the picture. And it's just a backup to the television series.
Yeah, and also with a book, as opposed to a Kindle or anything, I like it when you get the pages a bit sticky with the food because you've been cooking and it becomes one of those really loved cookbooks.
Look at that book. There's all sorts of stickers there. I always encourage people, if they don't actually physically want to write in the book, if you get one of those sticky label things and you put, I made it in Granny's dish, it overflowed, next time choose a deeper dish or something. It reminds you, because and also when I've got a dish, you know, a particular lasagna dish, and in the book I've said do it in a dish, say, 12, a particular size, I then go to my own dish and it doesn't exactly fit, but I write on the bottom the measurement so that next time I pick it up, I know and I don't have to go and find the tape measure.
Yeah, yeah.
I do it with a marker pen.
And you don't actually even have a number now, do you, in your head of how many cookbooks you've done?
Well, people are always saying that I've done an awful lot, but many of them are start off as a big book, and then the publishers will redo them in cakes or puds, and it's come out of a big volume. And some of them are little tiny books. But we do, Lucy and I do a book a year with a television series. So it's plenty of time to find recipes that people are want at that time, because our times have changed. I mean, we're being pretty frugal now because times are hard. And so we'll be giving... maybe in casseroles, putting a few more vegetables in, because vegetables versus meat is much cheaper. We'll be trying to make less waste.
Yeah, yeah. So you've been conscious of how people are actually living.
I always say, you know, open your fridge door before you start and see what's there. Can we use it up?
Yeah.
And will it improve the recipe? And, you know, we don't want to be throwing away bread. People throw away bread that gets to the ends. You could easily make it into breadcrumbs, or make bread and butter pudding or something. I think we've got to train ourselves not to have waste.
No, that's actually a really good point, and I promise. I'm looking you. I will not throw away the ends of my breads anymore, because actually, you're right. That's a real opportunity. And you mentioned Lucy there. So, who is Lucy to you?
I sometimes now refer to Lucy as the boss because she bullies me. you know, the phone will get an email saying, will you come down to Cornwall and judge our cake competition or whatever, or we're having a produce store or whatever it is, a bit of judging. And I say, oh, that would be nice. And Lucy says, you can't go all that way. I said, well, I could be on holiday at that time or whatever.
And so Lucy's like your right-hand woman.
She's been with me, it must be something like 32 years, and that's a long time.
Yes.
And we think alike. It's very strange if we're actually wanting... I mean, next weekend is Harvest Festival, and I sort of say to Lucy, I've got to take a dish, what would you take? And I think, well, I hope she says a vegetarian lasagna, and she will say, why don't you do that vegetarian lasagna that you love with all those lovely roasted vegetables? And, because it's something that I can do very easily, and everybody seems to enjoy.
When you were talking about Lucy being the boss, and you said that if you get the opportunity to go and judge cakes in Cornwall, your tendency is to think, yes. Where is that passion coming from? Because this is, after so much you've achieved, you think you might be thinking, well, maybe I'll take it a bit easier. But it seems like there's so much energy with what you're doing.
I think, well, isn't that nice of them to ask me, sort of thing. And also, when you get there, they're so appreciative.
Yeah.
And I was doing a charity. I'm president of the National Garden Scheme. And all the profits from the National Garden Scheme go to nursing charities, you know, like Millen and hospices and things. And they had an auction and they said, would I do a tea at Claridge's that people could buy? And so they had an auction for it. And somebody, a group of five, played, I think it was £5,000, and that was yesterday. And, you know, I thought, oh, it's a long, you know, I'll go up to London and that'd be lovely. And the, was driven there, which is, to me, a great luxury. So I just had to arrive, and I made quite sure I was smart, so that, you know, they felt I was making an effort. And they were absolutely lovely. And, you know, they had read my books and did my recipes and so forth. And it was getting near to 5 o'clock. That was just the time for me that I'd be going home. And I said to the... that I was going to be picked up, and wasn't I really lucky to be driven home. It makes it a real day out for me. And I said to the my guests, how are you getting home? And they said, actually, we're going by our helicopter. So I thought, I wonder how, no wonder they paid £5,000 to come and have tea with me. But they were just the most delightful, modest family, and... you know, I'm so glad that I did it.
Well, also, it sounds like when you're interacting with people, you've got this real affection, which sounds like the same voice you're using when you're writing your recipes and picturing them, you know, looking in their fridge, getting out their pans, all the things. You can sort of almost envisage this person on the other end of your words.
Yes, I mean, I was taught very early on not to... Some of my first programmes were with Judy Chalmers, your mother, Janet, would remember them. And I did cooking on these programmes. And I used to get very tense. And, you know, I took everything in. And in those... I mean, now I have Lucy to help me. I have Lucinda. We have home economists. You know, when I'm actually cooking, everything is weighed out for me and I just cook. In those days, I did everything myself. There was no Lucy. And so I would get to the studio... in Euston it was then, and I'd walk in and the there would be tables there with the news from the night before, pieces of paper, and suddenly the kitchen would be built, the clock would be put up on the wall, and the drawers wouldn't open, but you know, it looked like a fantastic kitchen. And then I would start to unpack my stuff and arrange my ingredients and things, and it was quite stressful, and therefore I was concentrating all the time and looking very serious. And I never spoke to the crew, and you know, I didn't want anything to go wrong. I wanted it all to be perfect. And Judy said to me, could you smile at the crew? They're here to help you. And also, if you don't smile when you're actually cooking, there are other channels. And people will be perhaps doing the ironing, just one person. You're not talking to a gang. You're talking to one person. That's what you want to think. And if you're boring and you're not making it fun and interesting, they'll go to the other channel. So I always remember that, that, you know, to concentrate on one.
Yeah.
So that people feel that, oh, she's doing that for me, rather than a huge... I wonder when you sing, do you think I'm singing to everybody there, or do you think of that one person that thinks you're wonderful and you've got to please them?
I think it is always one person, actually. And the same definitely for... radio and anything spoken, I think I always picture the other person on the other end. And I think that's, there's an intimacy in that. But yeah, certainly if I'm nervous, the most nervous I've ever been, the most tense, was when I was doing Strictly Come Dancing years ago. And I'd always come out on the live show and find, you know, someone who looked really, it would usually be a woman that would look maybe a little bit like my granny in the crowd. And I'd be like, I'm just dancing for that lady. That's it. And that would be the thing to relax me. And I think that that idea of having one person in the end, you know, as you say, that woman doing the ironing, looking through the channels, that's really, that's a really great image, isn't it, for who's on the other end. And you're right, people aren't watching in groups. It's just, it's just actually, it's actually
that
more intimate
one person
than that.
That so, you know, I was taught that, and I keep that in my mind today.
So when you said starting TV, was that when your children were all little?
They were small, and of course, my girlfriends, none, I mean, I'm talking of, what, in the 60s, and so I was working, and there was not much spare, so we had mother's helps, you know, and so they did a bit of everything. So it was a responsibility leaving them. They were, you know, they weren't an all and nanny. It was lovely girls who looked after the children. I always felt guilty. You know, I thought, you know, I should be at home, everybody else is at home. But on the other hand, I really love what I do. And my husband was right behind me, as he is now. I mean, he still says, you know, I say, would you rather I was at home with you? And he said, you love what you do, go off. I'll have a drink for you when you get home. But it was very demanding, I think. And I was always trying to get back in good time. And when I was at home, I was always cooking for meals, to be good meals to be left for them. And, of course, school holidays were a real problem because I was, you know, I never said no to jobs because I love them. And the more things you do, the more interesting it is. So I did everything. And it meant that as soon as I was at home, I would then have other friends of the children's, I'd have them in, and I wasn't very good at amusing them, except with baking. So I would have them, and I'd make maybe pizzas, and they'd make a simple pizza dough, and then I'd have bowls of all different things, and they would put their own toppings on, and because they'd done it themselves, of the things that they'd like. I mean, they would put things like peas on top because every child likes frozen peas, you know, all sorts of things. And then they would eat them for lunch. And also, I used to do an awful lot of the outdoors when we had children. I mean, now they have forest schools, don't they? Mm. But I would go out and we'd pick different, you have to collect 12 different leaves, and then we'd come back and say which tree they came off, or who can find a certain thing, you know, blackberries and things. And I would take them, getting things from the hedgerows, and then come home and cook with them. But it was a stressful time and very, very difficult.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When you first became mum, so this would have been late '60s. What was the expectation for mothers at that point if they were working?
It was very difficult, and I was on a magazine, and when I had Thomas, our first son, and I was in the office in Holborn at 11 o'clock, and I thought, I feel a bit strange. I think that baby's coming.
Oh, you work all
and
the way up
so
to 9 months.
I rang my husband, and of course he was in the office, and he said, "Well, I'll come and see you at, you know, I finish at 5. And this is absolutely true. And so I rang a great friend, who Shirley Nightingale, who's I still know to this day, and her husband was a pilot and a neighbour, and he came and took me into hospital. Because, you know, Paul wasn't quite sure whether he could take the time off. I mean, it's absolutely true. And he, sure enough, 5:10, he came, and I still hadn't had Thomas. He was there when Thomas came. And times were different.
And so with Thomas, did you... I think I remember reading that you didn't really have maternity leave for very much time at all.
No, I mean... If you were in a job and, you know, I was staff and paid, there wasn't much maternity leave. And also, you weren't really expected to come back. You were a mother. Mm. And so I was back in something like 6 weeks back in the job, which was absolutely fine. And I'd got help. but, you know, you're pretty tired. But it, and I was still doing proofs in my hospital bed because, you know, that's how it is. And also it passed the time and it's something I know. Mm-hmm. But I was very nervous of not going back and not... I loved what I did and fortunately I was paid for it. And things are different. And now I think everybody is very fortunate that... I'm not quite sure of the rules, but I think you have a year to decide whether you're coming back or not, which is... It's wonderful, but for the little shops or small employers, that's quite difficult to leave a job empty for, and have somebody else and then say, well, you've got to go because so-and-so is coming back to her job. But that's how it is, and I think absolutely. We're much luckier.
We are much luckier, but, yeah, there's still, I think, different areas have different regulations and rules, and I think also with what you're talking about with opportunities and specifically something you loved so much, I think it's not that unusual to have that fear of being replaced, really, and losing your job. And this is an amazing opportunity, but also something you cared about and you could tell you were good at. So you've got to seize all that. But I think, am I right? So you had 3 children within 4 years. That's
right. Yeah. Well, you know all about that. And it was lovely. And it was nice to have them. And anyway, I was quite old because I didn't get married till I was 31. So we had to get on with it. And we were very fortunate. And all the children, people don't believe it, but they all slept.
Really?
They all slept, so which is...
That's a big advantage.
They had a very active life because... and quite a sporty life, even from very little. And so they were tired, but about 7 o'clock they were down, and, you know, it was 7 the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I realised how lucky I was.
And I've read sometimes where you've been quite hard on yourself, saying that you think you weren't, you know, you felt guilty, but also that
absolutely. Yeah. Very. I felt guilty because, you know, all my girlfriends were not working. There's some help with charities, but on the whole, in the 60s and early 70s, a lot of people didn't, you know, that was your job, was to bring up your children. But mine haven't suffered too much. Annabelle did say when she was a stroppy 17-year-old, or maybe she was 16, I'm never going to work with my children. I don't remember you reading to me. And, of course, because of my guilt, both my husband and I read every night to the children and spent a lot of time with them. And my husband did, you know, school runs and things. And strangely enough, Annabelle has since said, "Mum, I was very horrid to say to you that I do remember being read to." And... she's working herself.
Well, doesn't she work with you?
She does work with me.
Which is a lovely,
you know, we're very lucky. We have a very good relationship. But there have been moments when people say, "Aren't you lucky to have a daughter nearby that's so lovely?" I said, "Yes, but you try living with her when she was 16, 17. It wasn't so easy."
Well, I think as well, with kids, you're very good at working out what gets a good reaction from your parents. And I know that even my own mum, because on Blue Peter they used to do loads of things where they'd make things.
Yes.
And then people would say to me, "Did your mum make things with you?" And I'd say, "No." And then my mum said to me, "You have to stop saying that because it sounds really bad. It sounds like I just did it on TV, but not in real life." But I think when you feel like you're, you know, it's very easy to feel like that with your parents, isn't it? And then if you get a response, then, oh, that's a good, I'll bring that up again. That really worked.
But, I mean, as time went by, I'm really glad that I did continue working because I have a wonderful relationship with Lucy. After all those years, you know, I can hardly, if I go and get a dress from Zara, I'm home. Well, wait and see what Lucy thinks of it. I mean, it is a relationship that is very important to me. And also Lucy and Lucinda, who does our testing. You know, I mean, Lucinda arrives with a donut for my husband. Last thing he should be having is a donut. And she hasn't asked me or anything, but you know, that's what I do when I'm passing the donut shop. I give one to Paul. And, you know, the girls all spoil my husband, and he knows it, isn't he?
Yeah. But also I think with parenting, it's a long game, isn't it? So we can put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be really good at that early years bit. But as you say, your children are fine. You know you have a good relationship with them, so you can sort of let it play out. And what's it like watching your children become parents and having grandbabies?
I'm absolutely amazed what Thomas and Sarah, that's my big son, and Annabelle and Dan, I spend an enormous amount of time with their children. They listen to them. They do things with them. I mean, during the pandemic, Annabelle took... First of all, she's very keen on tennis herself. And she took all three children onto the court and played tennis. It was shambles. So every afternoon, she would take one after another, half an hour each, to fill in the time. Because when they're all at home doing homeschooling, they did very well, all of them. And that, I didn't have that. Have all of them at home. I mean, it was so hard for everybody, wasn't it?
Yes, very intense.
And particularly when you didn't have a garden or couldn't get out to space. I think my hat goes to mothers who managed to get through that with children, because it must have been ghastly to be cooped up somewhere where you have no outdoor space.
Well, you've talked about outdoor space quite a lot. Is that something that was in your childhood a lot, being outdoors?
Oh, yeah. In my own childhood, the door was open on school holidays, and you just went out. And, even when you were about eight, we would walk to a park or just came home for meal times, or we took picnics. Mm. But, of course, it was safer then, or nobody ever... And also, in my childhood, I've remembered that the front door was never locked. Or the back door. No, I mean, it just wasn't something you did.
And that's now, amazing, isn't it?
Most of us are like Fort Knox, you know. Are the windows shut? Are the whatever? Just because it's a different world.
Yeah, it's true. But I did wonder as well because your childhood, you would have grown up through the Second World War, and I wondered what it's like to have a childhood that has that sort of very serious backdrop. Is that something you're aware of? Do you think there's a kind of like... a takeaway from that of your generation, something that you all share because that was what you grew up with?
We were in the war. I can remember my mother saying that rationing, it was a very small amount of butter and bacon and meat. Offal was not on coupons. And she was very frugal. And I can remember her saying, if you don't take sugar in your tea and coffee... And everybody took... Very few people drank coffee in the war. They drank tea, and everybody drank sugar, took sugar in it. And if you give up sugar and tea, there will be the odd pudding and cake. And that's what I can remember so well, because Mum would make bread butter pudding or something with a bit of sugar in, and she was very wise. And in those days, it was always my father served first, and then the children, and then my mother. And my mother became quite slight because, you held back because there wasn't that much available.
Mm. Yeah, it's a really defining...
We forget that.
Yeah, I know. And I think, the kids now are the furthest away generation, aren't they, in the UK from something like that. We haven't had to have conflict on our doorstep like that.
And, children's parties... were literally, you went to other people's houses or a village hall, that was it. And there were no theme parks, there were no luxuries, there were no, you couldn't go to outside farms and things, wildlife places. Everything was closed and you were at home.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think even... without that aspect, you also now, like when you were talking about wilderness and you see people dressing up and with their kids, the generation gap is much smaller, isn't it, in terms
Absolutely.
Of how parents are with their kids. I mean, you see parents being silly and dressing up and doing fun things, but I don't
Everything
think that was...
Everything is much more relaxed than it was.
Mm.
But, you know, there was lots of fun.
Yeah.
And everybody had a dressing up box of, you know, granny's old things. And, you know, we had great playtime, but it was all at home and created at home.
Yes. And so when you were talking about, you know, baking at home, have you always had as much love for cakes and baking as you... Has it been a very consistent thing?
Not really. I've always enjoyed cooking, and it doesn't worry me because I understand the science of it.
Mm.
I don't like baking more than... I really like cooking for friends and family,
mm.
and I love to hear what they say. You know, oh, that was delicious, how did you do that? And then I'll give them the recipe. I always share my recipes because I don't understand anyone who said, well, I'm not going to give you the recipe. You know, it's, life is all about sharing.
And, absolutely.
You know, in my book... I'm all the time trying to be up to date. I mean, now if we go out to a pub, very often there are sharing platters. That's fun to do at home.
Mm.
And if you're not a great cook, you can use things that are from the deli counter to spin out the things you've made yourself. I think sharing is what it's all about.
I agree with you. And also, all the best teachers are very generous with their knowledge. That's a consistent,
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely, whatever subject it is.
Yeah, whatever subject it is. Yesterday, Mary, I was re-listening to your Desert Island Discs, which I know you recorded a really long time ago. But I have to say, it moved me to tears on so many occasions. And I know when I walked in, there's that beautiful picture of your three children. And I'm just so sorry about what happened with William. I can't... You've basically had to live through every parent's worst nightmare of... losing a child.
Yes. To lose a child, William was 19, and he had borrowed the car with our permission, and he took his sister out. He was quite a careful child, and he just drove too fast and was killed. It was immensely traumatic for his sister, and it was such a relief to us that she was saved. And yeah, I mean, I remember the day, it was a Saturday, and I thought, well, why isn't Will back for lunch? And then there was a knock at the door, and a policeman came in, and you instantly know what's happened.
Mm.
And I felt so sorry for the policeman because he was, you know, looking at me, and he knew he had to say that William had been killed. And I said, but what about Annabelle? And he said, she's all right. So we went straight to High Wycombe Hospital. And we were given a cup of tea, and then coming down those long corridors in the hospital was Annabelle in a pink tracksuit that was muddy, running very fast. And I thought, I've still got her. And you immediately turn, at least we did. We had a family, a very great friend, Sheila Ingalls, living opposite us when we were in Pan. And that she has only one child. And I thought, well, we have two others. And I think we were, in a way, I mean, you have to take what's thrown, the card that's thrown at you. And although it is immensely sad, you know, I often think, now, if William was a couple of years older, or 3 years older, and he had a wife and a child, now, that wife could go marry somebody else and move that child away from us. You know, there are so many positive things that you can actually think, well, one was fortunate. And also, we went to see William in the hospital, and, you know, to see a child calm and cold and happy, you know, you realise it's gone to a better place. But I get a lot of people from my life storybook, autobiography, people say, I get phone calls, I get letters, you know, what am I going to do? I've lost my child so often in motorbike accidents or something about that age. And she said, am I going to get over it? And I will say, you don't want to get over it. You want to live with it. And which does happen. But, I mean, if William walked through that door now, I'd say, where the hell have you been? And I would expect him to walk age 19. But, of course, he wouldn't be. It's 30 years ago. And he was a very special child. Well, isn't every child special? Well, it's 31 years, I think. And next week, or the week after, his best friend from school is coming with his Anna Bells, his wife, to have lunch with us. And they still visit William and think of him. And, you know, it's lovely to think that people remember him as well as we do.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I've ever, whenever you hear any story about a child, you put yourself in that story, don't you? And it becomes your child. And I think, I always think I'd want their name to be spoken because they were here and
absolutely
they existed.
And in those days, there wasn't a child bereavement trust. There are other charities too. So I was.
That's we had you're a patron very, of, isn't it? You're still patron of the child.
Yes, I am. Yeah. And this is it's an amazing charity because they have trained counsellors who support the family when the child is lost. And they do special sort of Saturdays in different regions where a child can come meet other children who've lost their mother, their father, their brother, their sister, and chat. Particularly sometimes it's the husband who is brokenhearted. He comes back and he meets other men who've lost their children. It's very needed.
Yeah.
In some families, we were very lucky because I had wonderful friends and who would talk about William, who would think of nice things to do. In a, you know, 6 months after he died, I had a great friend, Claire, who William was on the 21st of January. Sort of 2 weeks later, she said, I'm going to Chelsea Flower Show and I've got a ticket for you. And so I had that to look forward to, thinking, I don't want to go to a... You know, you start off by thinking, do I want to go to Chelsea? I don't want to do anything. I want to stay at home. But, you know, gradually you realise life has to go on. And it does have to go on. And it's not the same, but it's different.
Well, I think it's... Thank you so much for talking to me about it, because I think I do agree with you that speaking about things and having the conversations is really important. I think we still have, you know, lots to learn about how to deal with people's grief. And
but everybody is different, Sophie.
That's true.
We had... I rented a chalet years ago for friends skiing. And my flatmate at the time, Gilly, was coming over by plane to join us. And it crashed in Austria. And she didn't arrive. And she was killed. We went back to England. We went to Bristol to see her parents. They didn't want to see us. And we were in the doorway. And in the hall normally were pictures of Gilly. And they'd taken all the pictures down. They didn't want to discuss it. And they were just nice to us. And I went with Penny. And, you know, the door was shut. And that's how they wished it to be, that the subject isn't open anymore. So you can't have rules.
No, that's
You've
true.
You've got
that
to
true.
Just... every person is different. But I would say that if you know someone who's had, you know, a tragedy, losing a husband, losing a wife, losing a child, if you're shopping and that person is the other side of the road, take courage, walk across to them and say something nice about their... whoever has lost, whoever has gone. It takes courage. And don't look the other way and walk, pretend you haven't seen them, because it's the least you can do.
Yeah.
But just think up something nice or a happy memory of it.
Yeah.
Perhaps do something a little bit later to see them.
And I think you're right. I think that thing about taking the courage and going to see them is really, really important. And how do you mother through that? Because I know that you're working at the same time through that very intense period of grief, and you've got your children. So what's a good way to approach that, do you think? Is that, I suppose that's something that the
charity
can help
talking
with?
About it, and also I mean, it's years ago, but I mean, if we have Christmas, we always give a drink to William and our grandchildren. Little Hobie was, well, he's not so little now, but he was making rugger, and he said he wanted to be the position that his uncle was, would it be his uncle, in rugby, because he's the same build. You know, they talk about it, and they're proud of him.
And I suppose with family as well, you can see little trickle series of characteristics, yes, and things, can't you, in the next generation, which can be really
and also
comforting.
I think, but again, some people, everybody has a different way of approaching a situation. There isn't a rule.
But you do seem to be a very positive person. That's a real through thread of everything I've seen from you, is that you talk a lot about feeling very lucky and feeling very fortunate and seeing the positive. And I think that's a really very special quality. It's a lovely thing. It's very, very comforting.
Well, I go back, well, as you know, I broke my hip a year ago, and I honestly was at the end of my tether then, because I thought, I can't believe it, that you fall over. And I was forever telling people, look where you're going, don't fall if you're old, you know, always take a rail, and blow me if I don't topple over in the garden and break my hip. And it was, I never felt so awful. And, you know, you feel very lucky that, you know, the National Health were absolutely amazing and did everything. But even so, you feel so ghastly.
Mm.
And I thought, I'm never going to get, I'm never going to get better. Here I am, just hobbling along. I was quite down in myself.
Yeah, I think illness, well, recovery can also make you feel very blue, can't it?
Yes, anyway. Of course, we had a wonderful GP.
Yes.
And she said, it's going to take 18 months. I thought, it's not going to take 18 months. And of course, I then realised that it, you know, when you're old, it doesn't heal as quickly as when you have a, you know, when I see one of the children has, grandchildren has a rugger injury and it's gone, you know, in a couple of weeks. But it does take time, and you have to be patient and do as you're told.
Yes, you don't.
Lots,
do, yeah,
of, lots of exercise, you know, sort of
physio and things.
Physio and things. But anyway,
but you have managed to come back with a new
I'm
cookbook
all right,
and a TV series.
Right. No, but that's again. You see, I have amazing support from Lucy and Lucinda. You know, I kept saying, oh, I'm never going to, you know, whatever. And they would say, take long strides, you know, hold on to the side. And, you know, they encourage you to keep going. And, no, you are better. You're much better. But sit up straight.
Well, it sounds like you've got this real lovely team, like a family around you of people you work with.
Yes.
And everybody's been long term as well, which is really lovely.
Yes. Well, I said Lucy's 32 years. And Lucinda, you know, came straight from Prudleith. And was came, you know, drove from London down to us, which was a good 40-minute drive. So shy, and now she's full of confidence, got two children, and a wonderful mother. That's... And she's here today with her lovely dog.
Ah, so one of the dogs is hers.
Yeah, that woolly one, the black one.
Ah, and, yes.
because she. She couldn't get a babysitter for him.
That's nice. It's nice to have such a friendly canine welcome. Oh. I've had lots of cuddles with the dogs already.
I'm sure it's not hygienic, but there are three dogs about here, so we love them.
Well, I wanted to sort of close on just, is there anything you're looking forward to doing? Like, what's next for you? Because I get the feeling, I mean, your mother lived, is it 105, is that right, your mum?
That's right.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, I mean, again... so fortunate that she was really well, and had no major illness, and she was just lonely. And I think everybody should remember that, on the whole, people who live to a great age, when the people around them have died, they are lonely, and it's very nice to go and see them. And we have a lovely housekeeper here looking after us, because I'm away quite a bit. And, you know, she's... Alison was saying to me yesterday, she sometimes takes our dogs out, and she said, I met a lady with a dog who lives in the old people's homes just behind us. And they got chatting. She said, "I'm very, very lonely, you know, when there's only one." And Alison said, "Well, come around for tea." And I thought, you know, if you've just a little bit of something, there's nothing like talking to people, because, you know, and also young mothers can be terribly lonely before their children go to school or playgroup. They're all on their own with a child, and befriend them.
Yeah, no, you're right, because it can be very isolating, those periods of life, can't they?
You haven't had time to be isolated.
I definitely felt it with my first. I did. I didn't have any girlfriends with babies, and I hadn't gone to NCT or any of those things, so I didn't really know anyone with a baby. And I waited nearly 5 years before I had a second one, so that bit was a lot of time, just me and a toddler.
You've
and
made up
playing
for it
blocks.
Now.
I have, yeah, filled the house. Yeah. Now I crave a bit of peace and quiet. I was very jealous when I turned up and saw your beautiful jigsaw puzzle on the table, because I love doing jigsaw puzzles, but in the summer holidays we went away and I started doing a jigsaw, and it was my project, and then my three-year-old pulled it, part of it off the table, and I actually cried. I cried for what it represented. I was like, that was my thing, that was my puzzle.
Well, you're very liable here to have a dog that jumps up on your knee while you're doing it, and then bits go on the floor, and then they go in the garden. As you pass, there are two bits.
I know. I'm going to have a go. Well, just to finish, I was thinking on the way here that I know, obviously, through the Bake Off, you're so synonymous with cakes and lovely things to eat, and I know you make other things, but your name could not be more perfect to someone that is known for cakes. And I wondered how life could have been different if you were like Mary Potato or something. But Mary Berry is just so perfect.
I think I'd rather be a berry than a potato. Mind you, a baked potato split in half with loads of butter or creme fraiche, sour cream, delicious.
I'm with you on that. How lovely was that conversation? Honestly, I had just the best time talking to her. As I say, she's magical, actually, Mary. Came away a little bit besotted with her. And she very kindly gave me a copy of her cookbook, her latest cookbook of her 60 cookbooks, Cook and Share. And we've done two recipes. I did the salted caramel cake. And listen, I am no baker, but it came out really beautifully. I would actually go so far as to say it's the best sponge I've ever made. And she also had in there a recipe for vegetarian pad thai, which we had. Do you remember that one, May?
Nope.
Oh, well, it was good. It was good and easy and fun. So I think that I would heartily recommend her cookbook. It was really lovely. But mainly, it was just a complete joy to speak to her. She told me after we finished recording, she's only done three podcasts. I think she's spoken to Fern Cotton, she's spoken to Sue Perkins, and now me. So I feel very, very fortunate that she was so generous with her time. And it was just a lovely, lovely, lovely conversation. And a lot of it's really stayed with me, which is what all the best chats do. Anyway, editor Richard is... Oh, gosh, sorry. There's all sorts of noise.
Put it on the bin?
Yes, definitely put it in the bin. We can't be no little outs. Ray and I are still sitting on the bench. Ray's quite enjoying having a bit of independence these days. We came out by himself to get himself an iced tea and some Pringles from the shop. And then we joined each other on a park bench to sit. I know, you did ask me, which is nice, Ray. There you are, go and put it in the bin.
The open cold.
It's not that cold. You've got a T-shirt on. I know, a T-shirt in October. Craziness. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me to have a listen to this gorgeous chat. And who have I got for you next week? Oh, next week we've got Dawn O'Porter, who's just got a new book coming out, Cat Lady. So, yes, my chat with Dawn is next week. And I'm expecting that will be popular, because whenever I've said, "Who would you like me to chat to?" Dawn O'Porter's name comes up a lot, and she is completely fab, and I love her very much. So that was a nice chat too. But for now, thank you so much. Thanks to Mary for talking to me. Thank you to Lucy for helping set it up. Thank you to Claire for beautifully producing the episodes every time. Thank you to Ella May for the gorgeous artwork every week. Thank you to Richard for editing and his tolerance of my inappropriate locations for recording these bits with you. And of course, mostly thank you to you. Without you, it would be a talk in the dark. So thank you very much. Have a lovely week. See you soon.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.